Welcome to the 1pm edition of the Finance Show here on tiptv.co.uk. I'm joined here by my co-host, who is Charlie Gibson, Head of Mining at Edison Research, and with our very special guest, who is Tim Price, Director at PFP Wealth Management. How are you today, Tim?
Good, thanks. You?
I'm doing very well, actually. We had a very subversive show on Tip TV Finance this morning, so you've got a very hard act to follow.
Okay, I'll try and rise to the challenge.
What is on your mind at the moment as we go, as we head into the abyss of central banking
insanity?
Insanity, yes.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure you've discussed it on the show already, but it seems to me that we're very close to reaching the tipping point in the interest rate cycle, in confidence in central banks. And if you were to try and identify it, pin it down to any one event, it would be the ability of Henkel and Zanoffi, corporates rather than governments, to be able to borrow at a negative interest rate. I wonder whether that might mark the sort of high watermark of this whole mess.
But isn't the clue in, you know, negative interest rates? It just sounds, that's madness in itself.
It is completely absurd in a fiat currency world. But then you still have advocates out of the major academic centres, people like Kenneth Rogoff from Harvard, saying ban cash. And the only, I mean, they cite the use of cash as, you know, as proceeds of crime and something that facilitates terrorism, which is all clearly nonsense. It's like less than 1% probably of cash is ever used for
illegitimate
purposes.
Whereas more than 90% of transactions are cash based on then the economy.
But not just that, you know, we've got, well, the rationale surely is that if you want to introduce negative interest rates and force people to use electronic money, the only way you can do that is by abolishing physical cash. So the whole thing is it's a giant fascistic, you know, up yours on the part of the state. And the fact that these things even get discussed seriously is extraordinary.
But why do, I mean, that's the thing about Harvard. You quoted somebody from Harvard there.
It was Rogoff. And Rogoff was credible because he wrote, you know, with, I forget the co-author, the Reinhardt, this time is different. So a very sensible analysis of absurdity, you know, of bond market bubbles, booms and busts through history, and yet the same person's now advocating abolishing cash.
But these people, you know, the academics, you've got the people who are commentating and have the biggest voice in the financial media are the academics, the journalists.
Well, people with no real world financial experience or economic experience.
And politicians.
The same.
Yes.
So we're totally. So. Well, that's one thing. So that's a fact that the people who know literally nothing about the area. Talk
well, the
about.
People who never saw the crisis coming and are now being given the airways to discuss the remedies.
And then, at the same time, who should we be listening to, and who is qualified for the current role?
Us.
Well, I think that I wonder whether the way the question's framed is flawed to the extent that. The problem I have with the whole cult of central banking is it implies that if you have state control of the economy, then a group of small, unelected wise men, and they're mostly men, with the exception of Janet Yellen, can solve the problem. But I'd argue that the whole premise is flawed. The history of Nazi Germany, of Soviet Russia and Communist China shows in spades.
And 1970s England, I would add.
And 1970s England.
But shows that China is booming now.
It's shows that a centrally directed command economy just doesn't work. And now the last bastion of that command economy is modern central banking.
But I was just saying, China, cheekily, China is the example.
But it's now taken quite a bit of the capitalist system. So you've had Chinese politicians saying to be rich is glorious. So there's clearly a sort of hybrid model now at work there. It's still a one-party state.
Right, but in 10 years' time, their rates will be zero as well, won't they?
Who knows?
The other point was that as far as Charlie and I actually solved the whole issue before you came on this morning.
Oh, good. Well done.
10 o'clock. We just said, well, rather than all this tinkering around the edges, just make it so that, for instance, the banking sector, everybody has an account with the Bank of England. Forget having RBS and Barclays and all these other sort of semi-autonomous organisations. And just have it totally, a central bank becomes the bank.
Well, the way I look at it is, I mean, it's now the 8th year anniversary of the failure of Lehman Brothers. That weekend in September 2008, you know, there were two roads that we could have gone down. One road would have been let the system reset, let the banks fail, which was an option. And the other one was bail out everybody once you saw the damage of Lehman. Now, I would argue, and I think Michael Lewis, the bond salesman turned journalist, has said the same thing. We'd have been better off if they'd let the banks fail. arguably we get to the same place. If you'd had a deflationary cleansing of the system, it would have been painful, but you would have had a reset and you would have got rid of some of, if not many, of the bad debts. What we have had instead is just extend and pretend, dump money into the system, buy time, but don't resolve the problem. So we're in a much worse state now. But moving forward to what investors ought to do, we're quite short on policy options now. I think the last time we were discussing this, I was pointing out that Harry Brown, who had this sort of four-asset model, that doesn't work anymore because two of those assets are cash and bonds, which are now clearly borderline uninvestable. So as by way of a sort of pragmatic solution, the one I would advocate for investors would be something that I think has replaced bonds now, namely the hedge fund sub-strategy known as trend following, which worked very, very well in 2008 because it had the facility to go short when everything was collapsing.
But then you're following the market. You might as well just get an algorithm and have a trend. Have a moving average underneath the FTSE 100 and just go like that.
Well, I'd argue there's only two ways of sustainably delivering value or delivering positive returns in the market. One is value itself, deep value, defensive value, Ben Graham type value investing, and I'm wedded to that, and I have a fund of that type of investment.
That must be pretty difficult to come by.
It's difficult, but not impossible. There are pockets of value even now throughout the world. Half of them are in Asia. They certainly are, as far as we're concerned. The other sustainable way, I'd say, of making money in the medium to long term is momentum. Now they're polar opposites. Value is clearly fundamental based. Momentum is, as you say, completely algorithmic, price driven. But I'd argue that where we are now in the cycle, potentially, particularly with relation to interest rates, what else can you legitimately do with your money?
You play on the dooms and dooms.
Well, there's gold. There's something like gold.
I was getting onto that. I was just going to say you play on the fact that fiat currencies are you're a seller of fiat currencies. Or that idea, and you go into precious metals.
So then you've got three. You've got three pillars. Then you have value investments. You have precious metals, gold and silver, and related equities. And then you have a momentum approach. And I'd argue that is fit for purpose today. And
the momentum replaces buying a basket of blue chip stocks.
No, a basket of government debt.
All right.
At the end of the day, I suppose the question is, as it's been for the last 8 years, is what do we get? Do we get deflation or do we get inflation? The complete failure of QE would suggest that for as long as the central banks are allowed to play their little mind games, we're going to continue to have a low inflation or stagflationary outcome. But if governments really get on top of this, the money printing of the last 7 years is going to be trivial compared to the helicopter money that's ahead. So I think any portfolio needs to be hedged against both deflation and inflation. And with that in mind, I think you want to own productive real assets.
Probably needs to be hedged against governments as well.
Well, you diversify internationally, so you don't keep all your eggs in one national basket.
Tim Price, Director at PFB Wealth Management, thanks for coming in today.
Thank you.
We'll be back after the break.